John McClane is a placist.
No daughter of mine is marrying a white man.
Any chance this guy can play harmonica?
Now you don't have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
You guys think this is where Bush and Cheney got the idea?
It's cool if you fucked Ellis. I forgive you.
Hello and welcome. We are back from theballerlifestyle.com. It is the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. My name is Brian Beckner. Thank you very much for joining the program. I feel like I haven't spoken to you guys in forever. We've been kind of back and forth. We ran a movie last week, and this will be the first time ever we've done back-to-back movies, but people love when we review movies here on the show. It's Christmas time, so we're going to do a Christmas movie, and so it's kind of – you're missing out on the topical stuff. It's not like the it's not like we're having a conversation like we often do, but we will be back in the new year with fresh topical content with some movies sprinkled in. As we always do. If you would like to reach out, you should do so. People like to react to the movies. I saw people reacting on our subreddit, TBLS_podcast on Reddit, where you can discuss everything that happens on the show, things outside the show. There's a lot of conversation there. As well, you can reach out via email. It's the most common, popular, effective way to do it, to talk to us. Mailbag at theballerlifestyle.com as well. You can leave us a voicemail. Higher degree of difficulty, 949-464-TBLS. That's it. The Facebook page, Baller Lifestyle Podcast on Facebook, Apple Podcasts, patreon.com/theballerlifestyle. More Patreon content coming there. This week, for a movie review, I'm joined as always by the great Ed Daly. Ed, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? I saw the Reddit page once, and then I've gone back to Reddit and I try to search for it. And it really is like the internet in 1994.
I know. It's not. It's like DOS.
What the fuck is Reddit? It's like, what does it like, stand I don't know. For? What is it?
I don't know. I thought it was only degenerates, and now that they've taken the porn off Tumblr, two things are going to happen. Tumblr's going to go out of business in like 3 days. B. Yeah. All the porno people from Tumblr are going to invade Reddit, and I just don't feel like Reddit can absorb more porno people. But hey, we got a page there, so I support that. The ball TBLS_podcast. I'm going to send you a link. I'm going to text it to you right now. We are also joined by, you know, it's rare that Ed and I will do one of these alone. We like to have special guests, and we like to mix it up with our guests. And this guy has joined us a number of times before. He has, I believe, last.
What was his movie?
He did Face Off last. Oh. He was on. He reviewed Face Off with us. And I've decided, I don't know, we'll make some exceptions, I think. But I think that unless I have people here in the studio, I think that three is probably the right number of people to have. In three yes. different places. It's a triple Skype. It's a high degree of difficulty. There's a lot of talking over each other because we can't see each other. So I think three is the magic number.
You know, one person who's going to complain about not being on this.
Jason Stewart.
That's right.
But I love Jason, and he'll be back. He'll probably
of
be
course.
Back. The Bachelor starting up next year or so. He'll definitely be for that. We are joined by fan favorite Mark the Nomad. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, guys.
Yeah.
I want to say, I remember from some of the earlier episodes, you know, hashtag long time listener, that you guys used to shit hard on Reddit. So I was like shocked to hear that there's a Reddit page, that this was like something that used to be vastly ridiculed on this podcast.
Well, I don't
even know if I can ridicule our own page because I saw it once.
I just texted
it.
It
was like,
right
hey,
now.
We open it up.
I'm
going to go check it out.
It's reddit.com. And then
do
the
capitals
little,
matter?
There's
I mean,
like
what is going on?
There's
with
like
this?
A little R.
That.
There's like a little R. I don't know. And then it's TBL
R all that.
TBLS, hell yes, _podcast. And that's our name. I don't know. I don't understand Reddit, but there's a lot of deviants on there. I know that much.
There's a lot of deviants, a lot of trolls. I know that
right.
Yeah.
There, right?
it's like a diet version of like the real butthole of the internet, which I think is 4chan.
4chan.
That's right. That's
a real bad place. But yep. Reddit's like, it's, you know, I'm in college now. I'm going to try to chill out a little bit, but still party. That's Reddit.
Reddit.
4chan is nuts.
Yeah. Well, we're on Reddit, and I'm excited about that. Okay, so it's Christmas time. We decided to do a Christmas movie, and we decided not only to do a Christmas movie, but we decided to do the ultimate Christmas movie this year.
It's Christmas Eve in L.A.
California.
Is Daddy coming home, Sue?
Well, we'll see what Santa and Mommy can do, okay?
A New York cop, John McLean, has come to see his wife.
I missed you.
Instead, he's going to have to save her.
Sit down.
Within this skyscraper high above the city, 12 terrorists have declared war.
They're about to be taught a lesson in the real abuse of power.
They're as brilliant.
Because I am interested in the $640 million in your vault.
As they are ruthless.
But I'm telling you, you're just going to have to kill me.
Okay.
We do it the hard way.
Now, the last thing McLean wants.
Think, damn it, think.
Is to be a hero.
Where's Howie?
Hey, Tucker!
Where?
But he doesn't have a choice.
What does he think he's doing?
John.
They have already killed one hostage.
This channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
Hey, do I sound like I'm wearing a pizza?
He's inside? Who is he?
Who are you then?
You are most troublesome for a security guard.
Sorry, wrong guess, huh? Would you like to go for double jeopardy?
Okay, I think everybody gets it. Of course, it's the ultimate Christmas movie. It's Die Hard.
I like how they were like, you know, people sat around a room and they're like, well, anti-hero is the new thing. And so let's just have the guy say, he doesn't want to be a hero.
Yeah. He definitely is that. So just the particulars, Die Hard came out in 1988, directed by John McTiernan, written by Steve D'Souza and Jeb Stuart.
There's a good book, by the way, an oral history of Die Hard. It came out like last year.
Can I talk about the book real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, the little fun fact for you here. This is not what you're talking about, Ed.
Okay.
But Die Hard is actually based on a book that have read called Nothing Lasts Forever.
You're talking about the 1979 novel by Roderick Thorpe?
Yes. Uh-huh. And a little fun fact is that this was supposed to be a Frank Sinatra movie when it first came out.
Frank Sinatra.
He played the character in another movie, right?
Yes. He played the detective. And then when he turned it down, Burt motherfucking Reynolds was supposed to be the dude. It was supposed to be a Burt Reynolds reboot where he was the dad and Holly is the daughter. And everybody they asked to do it, Warren Beatty, Burt Reynolds, all the old dudes were like, this is not my thing. So they changed the whole script and made it a wife husband deal instead of his coked out daughter who was banging Ellis. Saving the day.
Wow.
Yeah. I get in deep on something, I get in really deep, and I'm very deep in Die Hard lore.
Oh, I couldn't imagine. Like, the book came out in 1979. Frank Sinatra was probably in his 60s at that point. Like, I couldn't imagine him being a cop.
Yeah.
So
come out to the coast, have a few laughs.
It made for $28 million, which is actually a pretty high budget in the 80s. Die Hard.
And Bruce Willis was just moonlighting at this point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Die Hard grossed more than $140 million theatrically. Turned
the summer release.
Yeah, turned, despite it being a Christmas movie, I believe it came out in July. The film made Bruce Willis a bona fide fucking movie star. And if you haven't seen it in a while, for good reason. The movie became a franchise. When I invited Mark the Nomad on to review Die Hard. He's like, we're just doing the first one, right? Because I think he thought we were going to do the Justin Long version.
Yeah, it's a great flick. Yeah. I don't know what the problem is.
I saw it on a plane once.
Die Hard has been named one of the best action and Christmas-themed films ever made. The film ranks number 20 on Empire's 2017 list of the 100 greatest movies of all time. It stars, of course, Bruce Willis, Alan Rickman, Bonnie Bedelia. We'll get to that. It's just everybody's seen it. It's a fantastic movie. Everybody knows what it is. The plot, if in case you don't know, it's you just heard it in the trailer. It's Christmas Eve. John McClane's on a plane. He's chatting with a dude. He's going to visit his estranged wife, and shit pops off.
Let's talk about the plane.
Yeah,
so
start there. That's how a movie starts. He's on a plane.
They just, first of all, the dude next to him, and I know society has gotten less formal. Dude's in a tie and a vest.
Well, they're sitting in first.
Still.
I know.
In a vest.
Yeah.
But they just land in L.A. They just flew for 6 hours from, you know, JFK or LaGuardia to L.A. And as they're landing, they're on the ground. The guy's like, nervous about flying?
I thought that was a little weird, too.
I got a trick that's going to help you get over this. Like, well, buddy, we're on the ground again.
They've been sitting together for an entire cross-country flight. Like, they've shared meals. They're watching movies together. And all of a sudden, he decides to give them some advice about flying.
We're here. Like, I could have used that, like, 2.5-3 hours ago.
And also, his advice is, like, if you're nervous about flying...
Yeah, two hours later when you get to your final destination.
Yeah, but his not only are they there, but his advice is... If you're nervous about flying, after you get off the flight, walk around with your shoes off and make knuckles with your toes. What? Or make fists with your toes.
I do appreciate telling people to not take off their shoes on the flight because those people are monsters.
That's a good point.
And I feel like they reached out to Joe Piscopo and he was like, I can't do that part. Because that was like his body double sitting next to him. And I'm like, is that Joe Piscopo?
It did kind of look like
Joe Piscopo. He has the same hair.
Yes.
Same cadence. I'm like, is that
dude? Yes. You know
Eddie Murphy.
There's a lot of pre 9/11 things going on that you notice in this movie. Specifically, Bruce Willis is packing on the flight. He gets up to get his bag. And he's armed. I'm pretty sure that wasn't even allowed in 1988.
Yeah, loose. Yeah, but then again, post 9/11, I told you about the time I was at a Dodger playoff game, and the guy goes, when there was a fight in our section, he goes, don't worry, and he just shows me his gun. I was like, well, that kind of makes me worried.
I went to a game with a cop once who was off duty, and he's like, and he had his gun, and he's like, oh yeah, they like it. They like it when we're armed. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then he showed his badge, and he got us all free beers. So he gets off the flight, and he heads straight to Nakatomi Tower to the Christmas party. He gets picked up in a
one more thing. When he's getting off the flight, doesn't he pull the bear out?
He's got germs in the overhead.
Couldn't even put a plastic bag around that thing.
Check it, put it in his bag and check
his
it.
His daughter's gonna develop some horrible shit from getting that bear.
It always drives me crazy when people are carrying loose shit on the plane. When they just have like a grocery bag with a couple items in it, like get a backpack.
Those plastic bins are just soak up all the germs.
You imagine if you were going to put like your carry-on bag in and you popped open and that giant bear was there and you'd be like, there's no more room.
And when he's at the baggage claim, he just whips out a heater and blowing smoke on top of the bear.
There's a lot of aggressive smoking in this movie, not just by John McClane, although he is the main culprit. So he's got a limo waiting for him. They flash to a Christmas party where his wife is calling home. There's a pretty slightly racist depiction of the nanny where she's like, "Hola, Mrs. Holly," No, Mrs. Harleen, no telephone. Because she's like, hey, did John call? And she's like, no, Mrs. Harleen, no telephone, no. I'm like, oh, my God, this is so embarrassing.
Mrs. Harleen.
The McLean children, the boys got a bad bowl cut, and the daughters got bangs cut across the forehead. They have unfortunate haircuts. Yep.
Like he got checked out by a stewardess getting off the plane. Like,
oh, he did. Yeah,
there's a little moment there.
Yes, there was a hard eye contact sesh. So yeah, you could tell he could swing it around if he wanted to. He's got a limousine waiting for him. Which did I miss?
I jumped in real quick.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Better Bear, Cameron Poe or John McClane?
Cameron Poe all the way. It's not even close.
Economical, very small in size.
Yeah,
he's right. You could actually carry it. That giant bear is useless.
And Cameron Poe's bear is an actual character. It's like a plot point in the movie. It's something that confused me is Holly Gennaro, the wife, Bonnie Bedelia, miscast. Not that though. She doesn't know if John McClane's coming. She's got to call the nanny. Have we heard from John? Is John coming? He didn't call. And yet when he gets off the plane, there is a limousine waiting for him.
No. Mr. Takagi arranged for that, right?
I believe so. Ed nails it.
Takagi's like, it's the least we could do. But it's like they didn't say, oh, it's a surprise. Holly's going to be super surprised.
They didn't check in with Holly like, hey, you left this cop. Is he beating you? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Do you want him here? And it's like, no, we're just going to invite the guy you left.
Maybe she's got a restraining order against him, and they've flown him out
surprise.
First.
Yeah. Here he is. And I
she changed her last name.
And then they go to the office, and right away, Ellis, played by – isn't the actor Hart Bachner or something like that? But yeah, anyway, Ellis immediately is raising Me Too red flags.
Oh, big time. Well, it's a different time.
It was a different time, but they're like, we gotta really establish this guy.
Oh, yeah, he's a real piece of shit. Well, he's doing blow off the desk, and Takagi, like, looks the other way.
And then Holly goes and talks to her pregnant assistant. She's like, drink away.
Yeah.
Right. She's like, drink up.
He gets picked up by a limo. For the life of me, the entire time I've been remembering this movie, I had always remembered that Argyle was played by T.K. Carter. Not the case. It's just some rando actor.
I'm an Argyle fan, and I looked him up, and it would kind of bum me out. Like, he
died.
Nothing really. He did play the add-on character of Head of the Class, I think. Aristotle. Ooh, didn't,
yes.
Remember, like, at the end when they're like, hey, these kids are getting less cute, or you know. They needed something.
How can they still be in high school 7 years later?
Yeah, exactly. He was Aristotle. But then after that, I saw like his last role was cab driver on Workaholics or something like that. Like he's
working.
I want to say I saw him in New Jack City a couple years later. I don't know what he was on there, but I could be wrong.
They don't know.
No, he's not Pookie. He's not Pookie. Come on.
Don't get high on your own supply. Okay. he's got a limo. They're both really excited. Both he and Argyle are really excited to be in a limo. They head to Nakatomi Plaza where to get upstairs, there's like touch screen and it's like super modern at the time.
Bugs me every time.
Yeah. It's like they're way into the touch screen. And that's where he discovers that his wife has changed her name. Now,
she's not Holly Plain.
She's now Holly Gennaro, but it's weird because they're not divorced, and also she already had that job in New York before she came to L.A.
How long was she supposed to be out there? They have separate
Six months.
And Paulina, the nanny, it's like, oh, what could I do without you? Like, she has a full life without John McClane.
And his whole thing, he's telling Argyle, he's like, she took the big promotion, but there's just too much scum on the streets of New York. And I'm like, hold up. Like, you're a cop. You're not getting rich being a cop. You can be a cop anywhere, and your fucking wife gets some big-time job where she's a director at some big-ass company that
Just looking at that Christmas party, she's getting paid if she's an executive there.
She's getting paid. Although I will say this, budget cuts at Nakatomi Corp., like, why is the Christmas party at the actual office? Typically,
and why is it on Christmas Eve?
And also, why is it on Christmas Eve? The whole building's empty because people are home with their families, and it's 5:40 in the evening, and everyone's being forced to chill out at Nakatomi Industries.
Huge, good point, because nobody else is there. But he goes through that whole thing trying to search for his wife and the maiden name, and then at the end, the guy goes, "Oh yeah, they're on the 30th floor. They're the only ones in the building.
The only ones here."
Guy like fish around, and there's only one just group
go
of
up to 30.
There. Just like you're looking for your wife at you're looking for somebody at Nakatomi, right? The 30th floor. They're the only people here.
Right.
Who are you here for? Oh yeah, I'll meet you in the directory. You know, everyone's just upstairs in that one room. Just go upstairs.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
You're going to the party.
Find out the hard way that your wife has decided she hates your name.
Changed your name. Yeah. So McClane hits the party. It's Christmas Eve. Ellis is doing yayo off Holly's desk. Like Ellis is some big time deal maker. Does he have his own office? Like, are you just that comfortable doing blow in somebody else's office?
I got to jump back to something too. Yep. When he gets to the party and even in the airport, John McClane is a placist. He makes fun of California like three times.
Like, he does.
California. He just rags on your state, man.
It's bullshit.
California.
Oh, trust me. I noticed. He says it a whole bunch of times and it's rude. It's fucked.
He gets kissed in the face and he's like, fucking California.
Yeah, exactly. So he eventually meets Takagi, who's the.
Now, Takagi, magical deep voice.
He's got a real, he's got a real DJ voice. And
some might, I mean, at least I remember him as Janet Sosna's disapproving dad when Steve Sanders married the, what's her name?
Oh, geez.
Price? At the end, when he got domesticated, he was the father-in-law who was like,
wow.
No daughter of mine is marrying a white man.
So the party's going on, and so at first McClane's there and he doesn't see Holly anywhere, and then eventually they meet eyes and they sort of have a moment together. But let's be honest, like, Bruce Willis is at the top of his game. He is a dime piece. He's gotta be what, a decade younger than Bonnie Bedelia? Bonnie Bedelia is just like, how many, I know this wasn't a big movie when they made it, but how many people had to turn down this role before they settled on Bonnie Bedelia? Did that strike you guys as odd?
She had heat at this time. She played Harrison Ford's wife. Yeah. Like
she was the murderer.
Presumed innocent. Yeah. Yeah. My buddy Jake ruined it for me.
Yeah.
Bastard.
Yeah. I read the book.
I'm not sure what the Bonnie Bedelia hates for, man. I mean, like, I remember when I was a kid watching this movie, that was like one of my first real exposures to like actual real cleavage. I was like, "Whoa, check that out!"
She goes Bonnie after Bedelia?
Yeah, in that movie, she's like by the end of it, she's basically like her shirt's been ripped off. You're like, "Wow!"
Yeah.
As the night's gone on, she's struggling with her blouse.
I mean, it might be that she's just the only one left. So weirdly, John asks if there's somewhere he can wash up. It's like a weird question. And then he goes and
he gets down to a wife beater at a company party.
Yeah. And then he's being kind of a little bitch. Like he's in there. Bonnie's talking. She's like, "Hey." So he's like, she's like, "Where are you staying?" And he's like, "Oh, Sergeant Cotrere, he retired and he's living out in Ramona," which is a place. This is kind of confusing because she's like, "You mean Pomona?" And I would have been like, "Oh, Ramona, that's where they have the Apple Festival down there near San Diego." And so he gets – there's some confusion there. But then she's like, "Hey, you know, you can stay at the house and maybe fuck me a couple times if you want, you know, for old time's sake." And
– man, how is it not discussed at all?
I know. It's weird. Of course he's going to stay with his wife.
And how about when they're having the discussion, just a random couple spills in like it's a house party that they're going to go at it.
Yeah, they end up fucking in the next office.
Yeah, let's go bang on Holly McClane's desk. Oh, sorry, Holly, you're here.
Yeah, we'll find another couch. So, and then John's just being a little bitch. He's like, "Oh, you should have never left. Like, what? She's got this fucking great job. Like, what is wrong with you?"
Yeah, she won the deal. Like, are you looking around, bro?
Yeah, it's life's
her
going
office
pretty well.
Is probably nicer than your house.
She's a director, and they want her to make a speech. Like, she is. She's basically going to be CEO. She's on the fast track.
She's Takagi's number two, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
What was she doing in New York? How did you go for, like, what was she doing?
She's right. Running the East Coast.
Right, exactly. So things are going well for her, and this John McClane, he fucking wants her to just stay and be miserable in some row house in Queens while he's fucking being a cop. Like, talk about just a selfish, me first type of guy. Now we're introduced. So they're all up at the party, and all of a sudden something's happening down on the ground level.
We get a look at Sundown from Top Gun.
Yes. He cruises in. He's talking about the Lakers. He's like, you know, like, I'm not saying that having a black guy talk about the Lakers as he walked in. I'm, you know, I mean, it was the 80s and the Lakers were a big deal. But he's like, AC to Worthy, back to Worthy. And then he does that thing where he slips out of the way. And all the Aryans that show up with Gruber, they just start fucking murdering people. They're just like shooting the security guards.
It seems like you don't need to be slick with all the Lakers misdirection.
Right, if you're just going to kill them.
They just kill everybody.
Yeah. They kill all the security guards.
I got to stop right there.
Yep.
There's a guy by the elevator who probably didn't need to be flashbanged before he was shot. But yes. He's just chilling there. He's not. He doesn't look armed, but he's like, oh, look, it's flashbang. Like, this is complete overkill to take this dude out.
Also,
I've always thought that.
Also, they murdered his. Yeah, they didn't flashbang the guy at the front desk. Because
if you're working security at a desk of an office building, you're not prepared for a guy to just point a gun at you and shoot you.
And if you have $640 million in bearer bonds in the vault for some reason, plus some ancient samurai armor, you might want to think about just
spoiler.
Maybe a little more than a couple of ex-cons standing down at the front, like guys that couldn't catch on at the fort. Maybe they took a disability and they had to leave the force. They were pulling desk duty. I just feel like security was a little lax at Nakatomi Plaza, considering that they had the GDP of the entire Western Hemisphere in the vault. Did you guys think that was weird?
Yeah, I agree. That would tend to bring a little more security.
Yeah, I feel also, like also well, I can defer to you.
The cool rings guy, Brian.
I'll defer to you.
Yes.
I will defer to you. Is this like a rough neighborhood? Century City? Is this like a bad part?
No,
I was there this summer. It's the Fox. It's the Fox headquarters.
Yeah, it's just fine. It's just a regular building. So, and then John's upstairs. He's doing that thing with his feet while the security guards are getting murdered downstairs. He's barefoot.
He wants to get over being nervous about the flight, even though he's there, has had a full marriage discussion with his wife. Now he's going to get over the flight.
And he's like, oh, this is kind of working. Like, he's an idiot. He's doing the thing with his feet. People are getting murdered downstairs. And John's just totally cool with Argyle waiting forever. Like, Argyle pulls up and drops him off. He's like, hey, you know
that
where you're going?
That shit costs money.
Yeah, and he's like,
you know what? He's probably thinking it's on Takagi. What do I give a fuck?
Yeah, he's like, I'm not sure. He's like, hey, I'll tell you what. I'll fucking wait downstairs and talk on the car phone and be really excited about it. And meanwhile, John's upstairs, and he's had enough time. Like, Bonnie Bedelia's already said, hey, you can cruise to my place. And he calls down, and he's like, yo, Argyle, wait longer. Like, kind of rude, right? For a guy that's supposed to be an everyman, he's just going to have this guy wait all night in the, you know, he's like, I haven't decided what I'm doing yet, so just hang out down there on the car phone.
And also, how did Holly get to work?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's going home with her, what does he need Argyle for?
Right.
Argyle is a shitty employee. Like, he makes it very clear. This is his first
he's
so limo.
Lovable. He's the most lovable
he's like,
part of the
this
movie.
Is my first time. And within day, like hours of his first real shift, he's like, I'm just going to go in the basement and chill. They think I'm going to Vegas. I don't give a shit. Like, I'm going to hang out. Whatever you need. I don't care about this job.
But he's super excited to be on the phone in a car. Like, he's like, I'm cool. I'm just going to talk down here on the phone.
Well, 87? That was a big fucking novelty.
Pretty cool, yeah. So Hans Gruber's team disables all the elevator all the elevators, they like show them hitting the touch screens, Sundown's like taking care of all of it. And then, but they disable all the elevators. And then what does Hans Gruber and his team immediately do? Get on an elevator and head to the top floor, to the 30th floor.
And one of those terrorists, watching it this time, he really stood out to me. One is super femme.
The one with the long hair? Carl Hungus?
Not the blonde.
I think I know you're talking about. Long brown hair.
Yeah, brown hair. It was like teased and everything. He was super femme.
Yeah.
Could have been the Lost Boys.
So the Krauts show up to the Nakatomi Christmas party, and they're immediately terrorizing the office. For some reason, they walk into a place where they know no one is armed, and they immediately start unloading clips of machine guns into the air for no reason.
Especially Viggo the Carpathian. He's particularly unloading clip after clip into the air.
They're just blasting away for no reason. Meanwhile, good guy with a gun in the washroom, John McClane, is there. He's in a position to end the threat immediately. He's a cop. He's got training. What does he do? He goes straight for the exit. Runs right out the fucking back door. And instead of going down where the help is, he goes up.
And then he starts staring. He looks at some chick undressed in the window across the way. Yeah. That's the first thing that catches his eye.
Because you're like, oh, should he? Is he going to try to get her attention? Because he's like, think, McClane, think. He's not doing much thinking. He's just saying.
First of all, you didn't put on your shoes.
Yeah, no shoes. He's in a construction
site.
There's probably a lot of nails and screws on the floor, whatnot, glass. Then Gruber introduces himself, and he's looking for Takagi. And
there's like four Japanese guys there, and he's like scanning the room as if the blonde guy with the mustache is Takagi.
Meanwhile, knows every detail about Takagi's life. Born 1932, interned at Manzanar, went to Stanford. Your dad was a postman, like worked your way up from the mailroom.
Those profiles usually come with a picture.
Yeah, he's like, you got five kids. He knows everything about him except what he looks like because he's never seen a picture.
I don't want to make generalizations, but I have a feeling half of the non-speaking executives were also non-speaking executives in Gung Ho.
Could be.
They looked a little familiar.
So Gruber pulls, and really, it cannot be understated. I found myself, even though I was watching this on a bootlegged version on my computer, stunned at the performance of Alan Rickman. I really feel
fall in
like
love every time I watch this.
It's crazy. Like this movie.
This is his first movie.
Yeah, he does not get enough credit. He is so fucking good, and he's really, because it's a pretty pedestrian movie otherwise, he really makes this thing go as the bad guy. He announces he wants the bearer bonds. He pulls Takagi aside and he's like, look, give me the codes. I know they're in the vault. And Takagi's like, oh, that's not going to do you any good. There's seven vaults or whatever. By the time you get in, they're going to change the codes. And he's like, look, give me the code or I'm going to kill you. I'm going to count to three. And if I get to four, I'm going to kill you. And Takagi's like, I don't know. Like, he's playing coy. What's in it for Takagi to withhold the code? Just fucking tell him.
Exactly.
I mean, these guys, they're fucking terrorists. They got machine guns.
I would be like, here are the last three. Like, let me give you the rotation.
Yes.
Yesterday it was this.
You know
what it is today.
Take my car. Take my car. Nobody will notice. Take the money and take my car and leave.
Let me open this shit for you. Like, can I get you a champagne? All good. Like, just don't murder me. And because I've seen you blasting machine guns in my office, no worries. I'll open the fucking vaults. But like, Takagi has to be a hero. And what happens? He ends up getting fucking murdered.
Just not less than 5 minutes ago. And father of four. And like, you know what? These bear bonds are far more important than my family.
But this murder of Takagi was a cool way to establish, like, these guys are scarier than your goofy 80s action movie villains. Like, just in cold blood. It wasn't like a shootout murder. It was just
I'm gonna kill you.
Executing guy. That was a good way to, like, really tell you how serious these fucking guys are.
That was pretty good. But then immediately after he shoots him in the head, he's like, So Sundown, dude, can you crack the code? And he's like, yeah, no problem. Take me about 30 minutes. So in the time that they were questioning Takagi and shooting up the office, they could have just sent Sundown over and just had him, hey, just start working on the codes just in case he doesn't give it to us, because you say you can do it in 30 minutes anyway. So maybe it takes you 40, but at least you're already getting going on it. We'll see if Takagi can give it to us. And if we got to murder him, fine, but just, you know, you're the code cracker guy. So just go ahead and get started on that. I thought that was kind of weird.
One of the things about this movie that I love is, like, in really intense moments like that, when he's clearly threatening to kill him and you're like, okay, there's like this crazy standoff, right in the middle of that, Carl and Sundown are like, I told you, like, they have a side bet that he wasn't going to tell him.
Yes.
You know, and it's those little
moments.
They keep
it light. Yes.
Yeah. They're like, and then right after he blows his head off, he just hands him casually $20. Like, oh, you win. You win the bet. He blew his head off.
Yeah, these guys don't fuck around. Like, this is crime is their business. So meanwhile, McClane's up in a construction zone.
He's under the table. He's like in the room next door, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So he sees them murder Takagi, and he's like, holy fuck, I can't, you know, these guys aren't fucking around. Then he, like, makes some noise, like, escaping out of the room. And so they're like, what the fuck was that? And they, like, go looking for him, but they can't find him. Because he's running around barefoot on the construction floors upstairs.
If he's an NYPD, if he's a cop, I get it's jarring that you didn't expect your wife's boss to be murdered.
Yeah.
But, like, these guys are not like he's in small town USA. He's an NYPD guy. Like, he should know not to be making a big fuss when there's a standoff going on. Like, he's very sloppy police work.
Yeah, and he's got the drop on him. Like, they're sitting there interviewing Takagi. Just come in and start blasting. You're a good guy with a gun.
You should be. They should be a gold standard police force, you know, in terms of training and everything and what they see on a daily basis. And he just completely panics and makes noise and isn't wearing shoes. Well, there's a lot of sloppy behavior.
He probably wouldn't.
He hasn't had a drink yet at the party.
He probably wouldn't have had a problem if Gruber had been down on the street selling Lucy's. Like, he would have easily been able to chokehold him to death. No problem. But this
That's
is
Staten
this,
Island.
A lot of
That's
cases.
The Rock. That's the Rock. Staten Island's a different animal.
So,
you know, not to go back to the book, but we talked about Rickman being cast as Gruber.
So
it could have gone so much worse, because in the book the guy's name is Gruber, but it's Big Tony. Like, imagine how
Big Tony Gruber
gone if the bad guy were like, okay, we gotta stick with Big Tony. Think about the piece of shit they would have cast for Big Tony Gruber.
Yes. Now I've got your wife.
Hey, Takagi,
give me the codes or I'll blow your fucking brains out.
Joe Pesci.
McClane's upstairs and I think they send up Carl Hungus's brother with the serial killer glasses. They're like, no one ever gets sent out with a partner in this gang. They send him up there. They're like, hey, go see what's going on. And McClane is able to kill Carl Hungus's brother. But then
it's like a roll down the steps and snaps his neck.
Yeah. He breaks his neck.
Cool death.
But then, I mean, it's very cool death. But then, for some reason, he puts him in the elevator and sends him down as a taunt to Hans Gruber.
It's like a fun taunt, but not good for – it would be much better for your position and everything if you just can't get in touch with Hungus's brother.
Yeah,
you don't know where he is.
Right. They're not completely aware that they have an enemy to deal with at this moment. But then he's like, oh, yeah, you do. Look, I'm here because he writes a taunt in blood on Carl Hungus's sweatshirt.
Now, maybe it comes up at the end, but he, for some reason, McClane knows it's Hungus's brother. Why would he ever know that? Why would you know the brother relationship?
That did come, that came out later, and I was like, wait, how would they know? I mean, they look alike,
when he's on top of the elevator and they're talking about it, they say, go find Carl, his brother's dead,
right? And then he
jumped back like 15 seconds because the brother rolls up, and he's in a full sweatsuit, which is highly questionable.
I wear that, but I have that sweatsuit,
shocking. Yeah. He comes rolling around the corner. And he's like, no like one's Hans coming to Franz help sweatsuit. You.
Yeah. The sweatshirt.
No one's going to help you.
Yeah.
Like a Hans and Franz sweatsuit.
But I'm not going to hurt you. And then immediately unloads half of his clip on the floor.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to hurt you, buddy. And just unleashes fury.
They're trigger happy. These yeah. Aryans. They love to shoot at nothing.
And the old turn the bandsaw on trick. Oh, there's a sound over here. Yeah.
I read, I didn't notice it, but I read that not one of these guys could speak German. So they all just like mumbled things and then it was dubbed in German later.
Oh, that's so good.
Not one guy speaks German.
So I do like, now I recall that, that McClane rides the top of the elevator down to do some recon while they're checking out Hungus's dead brother. And he's like, go find Carl, tell him his brother's dead. And he takes a Sharpie and writes on his own arm, Carl. And then he's also already got written down on his arm. Yes, he's
writing shit.
He's also written on his arm, Hans. Like, I feel like you would be able to remember those two details in the moment. So then he's got a rate. He tells him, "I got a machine gun." So now they know. He outs himself, and then for some reason, he decided to call the cops on the radio and really alert everyone to his presence. I mean, I feel like he could have held off on that, right?
I don't fault him for that, to try to alert the cops, because maybe he didn't realize that they were on the, there are other things that he did sloppy police work here. I guess you got to try to, if you're already taunting them, you need to alert the cops.
You're right. So he, eventually he does reach the cops. So first, Carl has to avenge his dead brother, and he does that thing that they only do in movies where he's like, nobody kills him but me.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird. Yeah. Like, he's a bad guy. You're trying to get the bearer bonds. I feel like if anybody's got a shot, you just kill him. I don't feel like there's like, oh, hold up, this guy's Carl's, yeah, or whatever.
By the way, I could listen to Rickman read the sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Yes.
Carl.
So good. Like,
very difficult for me to take Carl seriously after seeing him in the Money Pit.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's the other guy in the Money Pit.
Like, I was like, I'm trying to take him seriously as like this scary terrorist, but I just see him being like this ballet dancing doof. And I'm like, okay, you did too well on your last part, buddy.
Tough. So McClane reaches the dispatch. He does a mayday call on the radio. He's like, fuck it, I don't care if they hear me, I'm going to get the cops over here. And then something that happens, this happened a lot in the 80s, and it happens a whole bunch of times in this movie, where he's like, hi, I'm at Nakatomi Plaza. There's a fucking terrorist thing going on here. There's Germans. They got guns. I took one out. We need help over here. Send the cops. And the dispatcher's like, hey, what are you doing calling this channel? Like, call 911, asshole. Yeah,
they did that to Jeannie Bueller when she said there's a guy maybe raping me. Yes. They did it in Home Alone.
They do it all the time.
Oh, come on. They did it to in Goonies. Chunk, when he was like trying to call the Fratellis, they're like, oh, knock it off, Chunk. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, and they do it. And when the Breakfast Club principal shows up later, he's doing the same thing. So they,
times have changed. But, like today, yeah, if you can take prank call serious. The police, yep, and get a SWAT team sent to someone's house
and get them murdered. Call. Yes.
And it's like, yeah, get them murdered. Yeah.
But like, by the way, the fact that you bring up, Paul Gleason, yeah, this movie had two of the most terrific 80s pricks, Atherton and Paul Gleason, two great, great assholes in movies.
Oh,
totally. And
real genius. And love it.
And Robert Davi. Hold on, we'll catch up to all that. So eventually dispatch is like, hey, like, let's get our fattest, laziest cop over there to check it out. And they call in
the great
Reginald Vell Johnson, who is at the, and this is another thing that happens in the movies all the time. He's at the convenience store and he's loading up on Twinkies. And only in the movies are people such brazen dicks to cops, where he's behind the guy behind the counter is like, "Hey, thought you fat fucks only ate donuts." Like, just really, like, just let the guy pay for his Twinkies.
Just let him do his thing. Also, one time I was in Vegas with some buddies, and it was like the hangover morning after, and we're just trying to gear up to go back out there, and we're flipping around, and there were like four movies in a row: Turner and Hooch, Reginald Val Johnson. He played the cop in Ghostbusters in like just the one jail cell scene. He only plays a cop. That's the only thing he's ever, even in Family Matters, I think he was a cop.
So he was a cop. So I see Reginald Val Johnson pop up on the screen, and I think to myself, how fucking old is this guy? And because I'm like, he's, you know, if this could be like a Danny Glover thing, because I hadn't seen the movie in a long time. And I'm like, he's probably like getting pretty close to retirement. So 1987, I'll take your guesses. Mark, as the guest, you can go first. 1987. How fucking old is Reginald Val Johnson? RIP, by the way. Not that I don't want that. I don't want to give anything away. Is he not dead? I thought he was dead.
You already did this to Kevin Mitchell.
I keep doing this to people.
Don't kill these guys off yet.
No, he's not dead. Okay. Reginald Val Johnson. How fucking old is Reginald Val Johnson in Die Hard, Mark the Nomad?
I mean, the floor has got to be 43. That's, you have to start at 43 and work your way up.
Yep.
I'm going to go 45.
45, an old looking 45. And Ed, you say you already know?
I already knew this because when I was trying to find out how many times he played a cop, I remember knowing that he was a crazy age for this.
35 years old, Reginald Val Johnson, born August 16th, 1952, still alive. He's
reported death. He was the subject of an internet hoax right before Valentine's Day last year.
Yeah, I never got the hoax part. I thought he died.
No, Val Johnson took to Twitter to show he was alive and doing well.
Now I'll follow him this on guy.
So I'm like around the same age as this dude back then, and as he was when he was a diehard.
Yep.
And there's God, that's shocking. Like, normally these are a joke. That one just shocked
it's
me.
It's stunning. Yeah,
there's no way.
I'm much older than Reginald Val Johnson was when he played his character in Die Hard.
You look great. Mustache great.
Probably 34 when they filmed this.
Yeah, yeah. So that
not great.
So McClane, for some reason, and maybe they added this detail. There's a reason he can't go down the stairs. They're not like guarding the stairs, but for some reason he can't go down the stairs. He wants to get down a floor, and I think this was ill-advised. He decides that he's going to rappel down the elevator shaft, or not the elevator shaft, but like the ducting, and he's going to hold himself up by his only weapon.
So there's got to be more supplies in the building. Yeah, that you could.
He's got a machine gun, and he like wedges it in. This is a famous scene. He wedges it in the doorway or the opening to like hold him up. Also, he's got it wedged the wrong way because it's got a folding shoulder butt. What do you call it? Stock.
Collapsible stock there.
Yeah, and then he's gonna lower himself down by the shoulder strap, but it's not long enough for him to reach the duct that he wants to climb into. Piss poor planning on the part of McClane. Like, how did this guy become a cop?
Only part of the movie that I realize he jumps off a building at one point.
Yes,
that with part the fire hose is more believable than him. Like when it snaps and he literally falls.
Catches. Yeah, the fire hose is way more believable than that catch.
100%.
Yeah. You're dead. That's the end of the movie right there.
He's dead. Yeah.
But first you celebrate your shoulder before dying.
But also, you leave your fucking machine gun behind. Like, you need.
Now you don't have a machine gun.
Yeah, you know. Ho, ho, ho. Hey, I no longer have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho. So he's in the air duct, and for some reason, Carl Hungus knows that. And so Carl Hungus machine guns the air duct, because these guys, they're not like trying to save ammunition. He machine guns the air duct, but like not the part where Bruce Willis is hanging out, John McClane. And so McClane's got – he's still got his handgun. So he's like kind of pointing it, doing that thing where he's got it like trained on him, like below. He's like waiting until he walks under a certain section so he can shoot him. But despite the fact that Carl Hungus machine guns like one section of the air duct, then he decides to walk over and just like touch it with the like push on it with the tip of his gun, which didn't seem like the smartest idea. But
and then he's so hell bent on getting revenge, and then when the one guy's like, "All right, we gotta go," he's like, "Okay, well, I'm just leaving." Even
exactly. He's like, "Okay, never mind." So and then so McClane's looking out the window. He gets out of the air duct and he's looking out the window and he's like, "Oh yeah, the cops are here." And it's Reginald Vell Johnson, age 35, and he's driving like in a circle around the driveway. He's like, "Oh, I'm just checking things out. Looks pretty quiet over here." He's like calling on the radio. And this is a very common joke from the 80s that I'm glad made it in this movie, because Bruce Willis looks out the window and sees him driving in circles and he's like, "Who's driving this car? Stevie Wonder?" Oh. Get it? Because he's like, because Stevie Wonder's blind.
So allegedly.
Be a truther there.
That's true. Stevie Wonder.
Because he caught a mic stand once. Everybody's got theories. Fuck you all.
He walked off stage one time by himself, no problem.
How dare you?
He just wasn't led. He was led out to the stage, and then the thing ended. He just walked right off.
Both of you were truthers.
Anyway, so then McClane is like, he's encounters some two more bad guys, and one guy's like on top of a table, and McClane's under the table, and there's some witty banter, and McClane shoots the guy through the table, and he utters the famous line, "Welcome to the party, pal," which is pretty good.
Well, the "Welcome to the party, pal" was when he almost murdered Reginald Vell Johnson.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Like he threw the dead body out the window.
He knew for sure the dead body was not going to crush the driver. He was like a foot away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just the fact that he was able to land it on the vehicle was pretty impressive. Like dead weight, like lining up, throwing a body off a building.
Always confused me here because McClane clearly chucks the dead body, but then someone immediately sprays his car with a million bullets. Is that McClane also shooting him? Or do they go, "Oh, our friend just got dropped out of a building. Let's unload everything we have into this cop so maybe the cops won't notice their guy's dead." Like,
yeah, right. They literally still have to check in, right? I mean,
yeah, he's got to check in at some point.
I was wondering about that.
But then like, it must be McClane, because the guys who were on the roof, those are the guys who ran down and he killed.
Yeah.
There were two guys on the roof. When they heard him trying to smash the window, they went down. So McClane is not only almost crushing him, he's shooting at him. He better be
wasting
accurate
precious
himself.
Resources too.
That guy's like head comes like a foot away from Vell Johnson. Then the bullets come a foot away because he's holding the gun, saying, "Welcome to the party, pal." Shooting
That's right.
at him.
That's right. So then
Argyle's just still talking on the phone.
I get why they do this, but McClane starts a dialogue with Hans Gruber that continues through quite a bit of the movie. Via the radio, where he's basically like slowly giving him tidbits. Like Hans Gruber is very clearly trying to get information, where he's like, "Pretty good for a security guard," and John McClane's like, "Try again, pal." Like, just let him think you're a security guard. You're like, "Yeah, I'm working my shift. Or, you got me." Like, it's weird that he wants to give him details.
No, I'm a birthday clown.
Yeah, exactly. And so then eventually the real cops show up. The principal from the Breakfast Club is the main cop. The bad guy from Ghostbusters is there. He's like the slimy reporter guy, hard copy. And then the cops, you know, they're not really taking shit seriously. Like Reginald Vell Johnson's like, "Hey, I'm 35 and we got a good guy in there and he's giving us intel." And and Paul Gleason's like, "It could be a fucking bartender for all we know. Send in the SWAT team." And then they send in the SWAT team. And of course, Sundown, he's got like all the cameras there. And he's like, "Okay, they're in 2x2 formation coming in the back door." The SWAT team, the building's under siege. It's been determined. A body's been thrown out of the building of a terrorist. Yeah. The SWAT team shows up. They're clearly about to assault the building. They have their tank coming also. They're like, the tank's almost here, but let's get in there. They roll up, and what do they try to do? Pick the lock.
Front door.
Yeah, no, they go in the back door. But instead of just fucking kicking it in or shooting it or whatever, blowing it up, they go, okay, get your fucking Magnum PI lockpick set, and let's just try. And they're like trying to jimmy the fucking tumblers, and we're going to pick the lock and get in.
If I was a member of the real Los Angeles SWAT team, there's a point where they're like walking through the bushes, and one of them gets cut by a rose. And I was like,
yes.
I'd be like, these fucking guys, they make us look like shit.
What was that detail? They didn't have helmets on or anything. They just have like their toques on, and they're just like running fucking up. Hey, I'm going to run in the back of the building. No problem. I'm the SWAT team. Meanwhile, they all get murked by Hans' bad guys, and he's like, just wound them or something, and they just fucking take them out. What else happened?
Endo from Lethal Weapon wounds them while eating a candy bar.
That's right. The Asian guy that's in the balding Asian guy with the ponytail that's in every movie but never has.
He was in a lot of shit, but clearly he must be a terrible actor because there were enough opportunities he could have had a line and nobody gave him one.
Never talks. Just electrocutes Riggs and shoots the SWAT team.
Right, exactly. So they attempt to pick the lock. Oh, I forgot. The bad guys have bazookas. They're like, hey, hold on. Don't worry. The SWAT team tank is coming, which should have come in the first place. And they're like, but don't worry, we're gonna hustle the bazookas up to the second floor. And so when the tank shows up, they fucking bazooka the cop's assault tank, and that deals with that. Then McClane attempts to 9/11 the building.
There are a couple moments where I was not sure what the end game was.
He's like, how about if I fucking drop some C4 down the elevator shaft? That should get people's attention. Well, they already have their attention. Like, the cops are there, dude. You're gonna try to take it down? You're gonna test jet fuel versus the strength of steel? I don't think so. So the Breakfast Club principal, he's there. He is not good at crisis management. He's like yelling at everybody to do everything wrong. He hates Reginald Vell Johnson. Eventually, Ellis.
He's so good at it, though.
He's really good.
He's the second best character in the movie.
He's pretty good. Ellis, my favorite character in the movie, to be honest. He's doing bumps off his hand in a hostage situation, and he's like, hey, I got this. He's like, I negotiate multi-million-dollar deals
for Ellis.
Right. He's like, I'd just be sitting there waiting. I'd be like, don't worry, cops are coming. I'm good.
Booby.
Yeah. So he decides he's going to try to negotiate with McClane on behalf of Hans Gruber. And McClane immediately recognizes the peril that Ellis is in, and Ellis doesn't recognize it until it's too late, and Hans Gruber murders him. And
Ellis, I want to fuck your wife. I bought her a Rolex. Check it out.
Yeah,
like we show him the watch. Like
show him the watch.
like what balls? Like, yes. God, we just met, dude. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm packing heat. I could shoot you now.
I'm a New York cop,
and I like. Yeah. I also like that somewhere during this movie, some Seagram's wine cooler executives are like, you know what? That's the guy that's going to sell our product for the next 5 years.
They're like, any chance this guy can play harmonica? So eventually the FBI shows up, and for some reason the FBI is Robert Davi and I believe a guy that was later on Martin.
Stop it.
I swear to God, I think he's on Martin. And they are like, no.
Wait, you're saying on Martin or Martin?
No, he was not actually Martin.
I believe he turned out to be Martin Lawrence.
No. He was a character on the television program Martin.
Possibly.
Yes. So they show up, and they're not much better. They're like, shut down the grid. Like, they're doing everything wrong.
Oh, another that guy. The guy shutting down the grid, Rick Dukeman from The Burbs.
Oh, I love him. He looked familiar. Yes.
Great. Love that guy. He just died like a year ago.
So are we sure? Not a hoax?
No.
Okay. So, and then Gruber and McClane finally meet. First, and I might have missed this part because I was taking notes. How does Gruber end up on the construction floor on the roof where McClane's hanging out?
His whole plan goes to shit if he doesn't have his detonators. Oh, right. And McClane has them.
So he's like, I'll just go get them myself?
No.
I will say that book I read, The Oral History, Ryan Abrams, I think, is the author. He's written some good oral histories. And they're like quick, like Kindle singles type things. There were things cut out of that scene, and that's why he knew that he noticed his watch, and that's why he knew he was one of the Germans, and they cut that out. Like there are things that were cut out that this scene with Gruber and McClane that make the least sense.
Yeah, because it's
the Bill
stupid.
Clay thing. Like, how did he know Bill Clay?
Well, because it says William Clay on the wall.
Yeah, there's like a directory on the wall.
The thing about the detonators, I mean, McClane's killed nearly half of them, so he's like, well, let me go check my guys' work before they died and see if they finished the job. Because the guys that were doing that were the ones that got blown up by the C4.
Now, what is the exact plan with the detonators?
They put the hostages on the roof and blow them up.
Blow the roof, but they could have just gotten away while the hostages were hostages.
Right, they wanted it to seem like they died. He tells that part at the end where he's explaining his plan. Like, they only come looking for you if they think you're still alive. Like, he's gonna let the building tumble around him while they make their escape. So Gruber and McClane finally meet on the roof. But then in a real acting job, Alan Rickman pretends that he's just like a lost party goer, where he's like, hey, oh man, I'm so scared.
Please.
Yeah, don't shoot me. Is that a gun? And then John McClane immediately hands him a weapon. He's like, all right, buddy, you're good. You're good with me, Bill Clay. Here, have a gun. And it's just a weird turn. And I guess that makes sense that parts were cut out that make it confusing. But he gives him a gun, and then Gruber he turns his back to him, and then Gruber, like, you see him in shadow behind him point the gun at McClane, and I feel like he would have just pulled the trigger at this point. He's clearly not shy about killing people. But then he like calls down and starts speaking in German to his guys on the radio.
He does pull the trigger.
Oh, he does, but not
eventually.
Right away.
But he had emptied the clip.
Right, not right away. And then they have an interaction, and then he goes to pull the trigger and McClane, I feel like he would have been able to feel by the weight. I don't know. I'm not a good guy with a gun like these guys.
Seasoned murderer probably would be like, right. Yeah.
He would have known there were bullets in it. But anyway, they have that interaction. And then Ghostbusters guy, I can't remember that guy's name.
Atherton. I don't know the reporter's name.
But. He gets all McClane's info. Like, he's got his hard copy stringers out there, and they get all McClane's info, and they go.
Oh, and he goes all INS on the.
Yeah, on the Trump's America.
Just one of his coworkers. I mean, you were supposed to find him funny. I loved the dumb anchor.
Oh yeah,
at the station where
Harold,
like, the Helsinki, Stockholm. Stockholm syndrome, and he's like, Stockholm, Denmark, or something like that. Try to sound smart, and they're like, No,
you dummy.
We get a lot of Goonies connections in this movie. You got the mom from Goonies as the reporter. You have one of the Fratellis as the FBI agent.
Movie's
rife with Goonies.
Yes. So Carl Hungus is still pissed, and then we get a weird, and this is kind of like the Goonies Why I Hate Christmas story. McClane and Reginald Val Johnson are just chatting, because that's what you do when you're on an open line. You're just hanging out talking, and he's like, so why are you jockeying that desk, fat ass, and eating Twinkies? And Reginald Val Johnson's like, well, actually, I murdered a child. And it's a little awkward, right? Did we need that story?
It was awkward. And also, like, he's his ally.
Yeah.
Why would you be like, hey, why are you working a desk? So maybe life didn't work out the way the guy planned, but like, what are you doing here? Yeah, trying to shame your only ally here?
Is there time? This is a hostage situation. Should we be making small talk on the radio?
Maybe not bust balls when I'm the only one trying to get you out of there alive, buddy.
Yeah, don't make me tell my most innermost secrets.
Yeah, Paul Gleason is up my ass every move we make here, and you're making it harder for me to like you.
Exactly. So, yeah, then Robert Davi shows up.
We have the shoot glass scene. Did that already happen?
Shoot the glass. Right,
that's right after the whole Bill Clay thing. That's the shoot the glass scene.
Yeah.
Right, because he notices his feet.
Oh, right. Yeah, he notices. Yeah, he's got dirty-ass feet. I'm sure Ed loved that part. Robert Davi, Big Johnson, is tells the guy from the Burbs to lose the grid or lose your job. And I feel like
shut it down.
Yeah, he doesn't work for him. Like you're not my boss. I'm in a union, dude. Like I got 20 years in. Like you can't fire me. You're an FBI agent. Vested. You're not my boss. Yeah. Like I can get my Teamsters down here in 5 minutes and have my job back. Like, what are you talking about?
Bury your ass in red tape.
They shut off the grid, which is of course exactly what Sundown wanted him to do.
and then they get right in, which
opens the vault. And then, McClane has a message for his wife. What a fucking pussy. He's like, hey. And it's not like a short message. He's like, hey, Reginald Vell Johnson, listen. I want you to tell my wife something. You got a pen? And he's like, just tell her that I loved her and she was special to me. And maybe it didn't all work out and I should have been more supportive back in the day. And on my bachelor party, I fucked a hooker and I never told her about that. And really, like, I'm not positive that that second kid with the bowl cut is ours.
Jerked off to her sister.
It's like a long, long explanation. And I didn't see Reginald Vell Johnson making notes. So
it's cool if you fucked Ellis. I forgive you.
So, Ghostbusters guy shows up at Holly Gennaro's house and threatens to call immigration, Trump's America, to get her to let him talk to the kids, which is insane. He's like, talk in the camera, kids. I don't feel like that's very ethical. And then McClane also at that same time, McClane realizes that Gruber's whole plan is to blow up the building, which I got to ask. You guys think this is where Bush and Cheney got the idea? Where they're like, hey, we got we put charges on the roof.
Yeah.
And once we blow up the roof, like all the floors are going to fall in on each other. Like, this is a pretty good idea.
And when they shut down the power, that's when they immediately get into the vault, right?
Yes.
Yes. Right.
And
yeah, it opens
in
up.
That vault. I also noticed there were like paintings. Like, it looked like there was a Degas over, you know, the ballerina guy. Like, it looked like there were like real paintings. What's going on in this building that they're just holding all kinds of shit with no security?
There was ancient samurai armor.
Yeah, that's right. There's like what is this place that only has like rent-a-cops there?
Very weird. Very weird.
Flashbangs.
So then McClane's up on the roof. He's figured out the plan. Carl Hungus is there. They have their like big fight. And he ends
up top five movie fights of all time. Yeah, I fucking love that fight.
It's pretty good. And he ends up hanging Carl Hungus by a chain.
There's a part where they're fighting and where Bruce Willis says, I'm going to fucking kill you. Yeah. I'm going to fucking cook you. And I'm going to fucking eat you. And they're just beating the shit out of each other.
I'm
going to fucking cook you. I'm going to eat you.
No, like McClane, I was noticing, I'm like, this guy fights like I fuck. Like he tells you every detail of what he's about to do. He's like, I'm gonna fish hook you, and then shove my fingers up your nose, and then I'm gonna fucking spin you around, and I'm gonna grab you by the hair, and I'll just, you won't notice it, but that's my thumb in your asshole. And it's like, okay, dude, we get it. Like, we got the details.
Yeah. Slow down.
Carl tries to go like full kung fu, like he's like doing like legit karate stances.
He tries a karate chop. That's not gonna help.
Oh, I forgot about that. Like, he legitimately tries to judo chop.
Yes. But he ends up getting his. He gets hung by a chain. Then McClane.
And you have the showdown.
McClane again just doesn't really have the best judgment. He runs up to the roof and Gruber has herded all of the. So he's got a plan. He's told Paul Gleason, he's like, look, release all my comrades in Myanmar and Northern Ireland. And he's like pretending he's a real terrorist. And then he's like, and then send a couple choppers to the roof. And I feel like this would never work out. Like, unless you're DB Cooper, this whole, like, I'm going to need to commandeer an aircraft. It just never works. But he's like, send a couple aircraft to the roof to pick us all up, and then I'll tell you what to do. And so the aircraft are coming in, and the Robert Davi thinks he's in Nam. He's like, yeah, just like Da Nang, we're going to take out some gooks. Like, he's like way too into it.
Yeah, I liked his partner's response. It's like, I was in middle school.
Yeah, exactly. The guy that ended up being on Martin later.
Casually, they're also like, we're probably going to lose 40% of the hostages. I can live with that.
Yeah, 25%. Yeah. The pilot's like, yeah, we're going to probably kill a lot of these people. And they're like, cool.
No problem. Them zealous.
Yeah.
So McClane realizes the plan. He's like, oh, the fuck, they got a whole, all the C4 is for the roof. They're going to blow up the roof. So instead of just calmly explaining to the hostages, he like screams out unintelligibly, you guys got to get the fuck off the roof. And they're all like kind of standing around scared. So what is he, what does he do to defuse the situation?
Same thing he did to Vel J. Starts shooting at him.
He starts fucking machine gunning the air.
Yeah. This is how accidents happen, John.
But then has the balls to be like, why are you shooting at me? I'm on your side. Like, you're fucking spraying bullets in the air, ass face. Like, how are they supposed to think?
Then he comes up. Then so he sends all the hostages.
I think the pregnant assistant, when he's doing Where's Holly, I think she says where Gruber got her.
Right. So he sends everybody down the stairs, and instead of just going down the stairs with them, he's like, no, I got a different way. I want to go one floor below and the elevator doesn't work. So what I'm going to do is, cause this roof's going to blow up, I'm going to take a fire hose and I'm going to tie it around my waist. And then as soon as the roof's blowing up, I'm going to jump off the side of this building, and then who knows where I land. Like, the thing that the fire hose is attached to is going to explode and come crashing down with the building, but that's okay because I'll already be on a different floor. And that's what he does. He launches himself. It's a very famous scene. He launches himself off the side of the building, and then he machine guns the floor below him and barely flies in on the broken glass as everything's exploding. And then the base or whatever, the roller that holds the hose, that comes behind him and almost pulls him off the building, but he's able to survive that. Bad idea, or worst idea ever.
It's a fun scene though. That's a pretty cool scene where he's got to quickly get out.
Yeah. Well, everything's all a fever dream after he falls to his death in the elevator shaft. Like, that's the whole movie. Like, he died way earlier.
Yeah, he was really dead.
He died in the first 20 minutes.
But Gruber blows the roof, and they're like, hey, Carl's up there. He's like, I give a fuck. So, and he just blows the roof anyway. Like, the other terrorists are like, I know all the other guys are dead, but Carl's up there. He's like, I don't care, man. We're blowing the roof. Yeah. Fuck Carl.
Gruber's final pairing, it's him and the Huey Lewis looking guy who was the security guard.
Yeah, the least important guy on the whole squad. Yeah,
the guy who just watched football the
in
whole
boots.
Time.
Yeah, he had $50 on SC Notre Dame on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they don't play then. Yeah. But yeah, he looks like Huey Lewis.
He looks exactly like Huey Lewis. I mean, I'll be honest. I think when I first saw this in 1988, I thought I was a huge Huey Lewis fan at the time, and I was confused.
And he was already in Back to the Future, so you figured, I guess he just does things like this.
Yeah, I briefly thought that was Huey Lewis. So then Robert Davi, within the explosion, Robert Davi's chopper goes down. And Bonnie Bedelia, meanwhile, she's been determined to be a high-value asset, so Gruber's holding on to her for a while, and she really isn't the best hostage. this is a guy that you've seen murder, or you know has murdered your boss. He's
guilty as fuck.
Yeah, he's murdered your work boyfriend. Like, he does not give a fuck. And she's like, you dumb motherfucker. Like, my husband's going to get you. Shut the fuck up. Like, how did she survive as long as she did, right?
And he's got the bearer bonds in his possession now.
So yeah, he's got just, what he needs. He can just kill her. Yeah. So then Argyle, he's been sitting there on the phone all the time. He sees the black nerd from Hans Gruber's gang, Sundown, taken off. And in the ambulance, their whole plan is that they're going to, as the building collapses, they're going to escape in an ambulance.
Yeah, like the town.
Right. Yeah, they're just going to
– the end of the town.
They're just going to be in a municipal vehicle and no one's going to notice, much like Den of Thieves also with the ambulance. So
acting tour de force,
classic movie. Pablo Shriver should be in everything from now on. But meanwhile, what the ambulance guy doesn't realize is that Argyle's down there in the limousine, and he's been chilling, even though he's known that the building's been under siege for hours. He's just hung out there
until he decides he can just drive through the gates.
Right, and so he takes.
We're bearing a lead here.
Yes.
C4 exploded three floors above Argyle's head.
Yeah.
And he didn't move. Yeah. You think that would disrupt the
cell
signal?
I'm in the middle
signal?
Of a very important car phone conversation.
Yes, he was drinking. Like, the guy had driving to do, and he's back. He's like biting the tops off airplane bottles.
Yeah. In playing Bobby Brown's greatest hits.
Yes. So he has
no skin in the game. He doesn't know the dynamics. He sees a guy getting into the ambulance.
Yeah, get the fuck out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How does he know that's
what does he know that's well, a bad guy or an ambulance
the
driver?
Ambulance,
like, somebody could have died.
The ambulance comes out of the back of a moving truck. So maybe he gets wise at that point. But at any rate, he takes out the ambulance. McClane.
And a great knockout punch. He crushes Sundown with that punch.
McClane once again gets the drop on Hans Gruber, but instead of like quietly sneaking up and shooting all the bad guys, what's he do? He immediately announces his presence. Hey Gruber, I'm right here.
Yeah.
And
he's looking like shit too. Like,
he's so
shell
dirty.
Of a man.
Yeah, so dirty and bloody, and he just looks bad. And so of course, Gruber's got his wife there, Holly, and he's
Got his wife, but Huey Lewis could easily just shoot him right here.
Yep. This always drives me crazy when there's two against one. Like,
Huey Lewis is just watching. Maybe it is Huey Lewis, and he only wants to sing, I want a new drug.
He wanted a new drug. He was thinking about the next drug that
he wasn't thinking about killing McClane.
So he wanted a new drug. So McClane does, and this is, I mean, when you're 12, 13 years old and this movie comes out, and you're seeing it in the theater, and the fucking hero has a gun with two bullets in it, and he's fucking got it taped to his back. I'm engorged right now just thinking about it, because it is so badass. He's like, put down the gun, McClane, and he's like, all right, you got me. Well, he wouldn't have got you if you just hadn't announced your presence right away, but he puts down his machine gun and he puts the hands up like, hey, like, oh, all right, my hands are up, you got me. Meanwhile, Hans Gruber could just murder him right there. He's inclined to murder people. Like, it's not hard for him to kill.
He did not bat an eye with Ellis or Takagi.
Yeah, and meanwhile,
and they didn't try to kill him.
Carl Hungus is on his own team and he doesn't give a fuck. Meanwhile, he doesn't kill McClane, and that's to his own detriment, because McClane, despite not shooting lots of people that he should have shot, immediately becomes the fucking bullseye master, Annie Oakley. He pulls the taped gun behind his shoulder. He takes out Huey Lewis with a fucking gunshot right to the forehead, and he takes out Hans Gruber, and Hans Gruber stumbles back and he's falling out the window and he's holding on to Holly Gennaro's arm. And what is the grip that he has on her wrist?
watch. But that Ellis's Rolex. Ellis's
yeah,
Rolex.
That new Rolex she got for closing all those deals.
Show them the watch.
Since they moved to LA. But
6 months of deal closings.
Yeah, the watch doesn't hold him. And in one of the maybe the greatest fucking bad guy death scene ever, Hans Gruber falls away off the building to his death, although he was already shot.
So I read this several times, so maybe no, but the deal was they really had him drop 25 feet onto one of those big
fuck that.
Like as an actor,
25 feet, yeah. That's 2.5 stories.
Yeah, as an actor, no. It's like, can you just drop me 5 feet and then like CGI it? So what they did is they said, we're going to drop you on the count of three. And they said one and just let him go.
Oh, that is – oh, cause so he'd look more surprised.
He's really scared in that scene.
I feel like they do that a lot in movies. I feel like I've heard that about other movies where they trick the actor, which is fucked.
Poor guy, he was the best part of the movie. It's his first movie ever. And the director just totally fucks with his trust.
Yeah. John McTiernan, bad guy.
You know, when the Huey Lewis guy takes a bullet to the head, that's probably the most satisfying moment for me, just for like a continuity person. Like earlier in the movie, he's like, I'm watching USC Notre Dame and I got 20 bucks on these assholes. Like Christmas Eve, college football season's been over for weeks. This is the 80s. Like when he dies, I was excited.
A better move would have been if they said, yeah, I'm betting on the Blue Bonnet Bowl or the Hawaii Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not
Holiday
sure.
Bowl.
Yeah, Poinsettia whatever's Bowl. Going on in the 80s, the Cherry Bowl in those days. But like, it would not be two premier programs. They're not playing on New Year's Eve. Right? Christmas Eve.
It was USC Hawaii. Notre Dame.
I mean, I've watched the last couple of years after the kids go to bed, like I've watched Hawaii Bowl. No, like that's what's on.
Your lesser bowl games pop off around Christmas time. Everybody knows that. That's the problem. Yep. These guys that make these movies, these guys grew up nerds. Like,
I know shit about sports.
Yeah, they're not fucking real men like we are that know about sports and shit and tough shit.
I had to say that part, that little nugget for the sports podcaster record.
That's right. I appreciate that. Anything else you want to add, Mark the Nomad, from via because you read the?
So at the end of the book,
is it as good as the book?
No, Die Hard. This is the situation where the movie far surpasses the book. The book's
crazy.
Not great.
Yeah.
And Holly Gennaro in the book is in on it, and she literally gets ripped out the window and falls to her death with Hans.
Shut
up!
Tony.
She dies. Yeah, she's in on the robbery.
She's in on it? That would have been just like her character in Presumed Innocent.
Presumed Innocent.
Yeah.
That's like the real book for The Natural. He strikes out. Like, the real book is even terrible. Better.
Yeah.
That's terrible. The test audience was probably like, what the fuck?
Yeah, they had to shoot two.
Yeah. Best line in the movie is when Hans Gruber's falling and he's like, hope that's not a hostage. Like, so good.
So good.
my second favorite line is when Gruber's talking to Sundown and he's like, it's Christmas, Theo. It's the time of miracles. When he's trying to.
I love the SWAT team guy. Send in the car. Like just the way he says it. So I rewind that scene just to hear that guy say send in the car.
There are so many good lines in this movie. They just pop up like almost every scene. There's a memorable note that you're like, oh yeah, I forgot that. It's definitely worth watching.
There was the one action scene we haven't addressed. How did Hungus, fresh off his murder,
he was hung.
And log jamming, like he was hung, and he was hung like 20 feet in the air.
Yes, and then he shows back up
and was not like, yeah, I mean, he didn't break his legs. He was able to walk out and try and get off a shot, or almost get off a shot.
Yeah, yep. and his face is all, like, he looks all burned, like Freddy Krueger. Like he looks like an undead serial killer when he shows back up, like a slasher movie villain, like Jason without the mask, Jason Voorhees.
Reginald Vell Johnson commits his first murder since killing that little boy.
Right. That's right. Yes.
So now he's at 50% of innocent deaths,
and then almost plugs Argyle. Like he turns on him when Argyle blows out the door.
That's right. he would have dropped it down to 33%.
Yeah.
Of justified conflict.
Yeah. So that is like the redemption story of the movie. Reginald Vell Johnson emerges not only a baby killer. Like he's he's a baby killer and an adult killer.
Only half of your deaths are babies.
Right. 50%. Yeah.
I will say the one thing that was when I rewatched it this weekend, I introduced it to my son who turned 11 about a month ago. Nice. And it was like, you know, when you see that, like you revisit it when you're that kind of age. And it's crazy. Like, this is, like you said, when he's got the gun with two bullets, he's got the gun taped to his back. It was like my son's head was going to explode. Like, that is.
Because it's so badass.
It's badass. Yeah. Like, it's I still love this movie. But watching it through his eyes, like, you realize your head's going to explode when these moments happen. You know, when you're that age. Yeah.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
I did Die Hard with my 11-year-old, same age. Predator blew his fucking mind. Predator was like insane to him. Like he's obsessed with Predator now.
Predator gave me a nightmare.
Predator,
really?
Predator has some pretty weak special effects in retrospect.
You see the outline of shit.
I watched it it was on not that long ago, and I was watching it with my kid.
But at the same time, 11-year-olds are pretty fucking dumb.
Carl Weathers and Bill Duke had like a real easy shot. I can't believe I'm getting into this right now. They had a couple real easy shots at Predator because they had machine guns themselves, and Predator was like
Weathers fucked up.
Yeah, Predator was just standing on a branch, and they could totally see him, and they're like, okay, I'm going to go around. I'm going to sneak around the other side and flank him. And it's like, just shoot him right there. He's right there.
He's right there.
Just shoot.
This is the first time we've actually laid eyes on him the whole time. He's right there. Just shoot.
Predator fact, the helicopter pilot that rescues Arnie and the chick and whoever else was there, also the Predator.
No shit.
Dual role.
Wow.
Yeah. Mind blown on that one.
Okay, guys. Really appreciate it. Anything else? Anybody have anything to add?
Well, I was just looking at the IMDb.
Yeah.
And the fact that I read that none of the guys spoke German, one of the terrorists' name was Wilhelm von Homburg. How the fuck do you not know German?
Bullshit. That's bullshit.
And also, Little Johnson, Big Johnson's Robert Davi.
Right.
Little Johnson, the guy's first name was Grand.
Right.
Grand Bush is his name. Grand Bush.
Did he show up? Was he a character on the Martin Lawrence sitcom? Martin.
Grand Bush.
Eponymous.
There we go. Grand L. Bush.
Grand L. Bush. FBI agent Little Johnson. Born 1955. Only 3 years younger than Reginald Vell Johnson.
He was... wait a second. He played Todd Bridges' father in Building Bridges, an autobiographical short film about the rise and fall of. I don't think that was a great role for him.
He's younger than. He was not on.
No, you just made that mistake. He played the Black Panther leader in Forrest Gump.
Fuck yeah, he did. Fuck yeah, he did. This guy works.
That's well, good
he
work.
Did. He did it up until 2002.
Years ago.
Yeah. Well, that's a good run.
You know what?
From the 80s to the 2000s.
Once he starred as Jim Bridges in Building Bridges in 2000, it just kind of petered out after that.
Didn't work. All right. I appreciate it, guys. Excellent job. Mark the Nomad, thank you very much. Question.
Yes.
What words do I need to mute on Twitter for when – eventually, in like a week or so, Jim Harbaugh takes the Green Bay Packers head coaching job.
You are going to want to mute suicide.
Yeah.
You're going to want to mute fuck everything.
You're going to do a whole thing.
Hang on a second, Mark.
Yeah. Yep.
In an off season where you could lose Harbaugh but lose Urban Meyer, I would think that's still a better trade-off.
Urban Meyer, yep.
Yeah, you know what?
I'm just saying, like, if you I'm could say what fan, I would want I've from this off-season, the gloves up.
Oh, you've quit. You've quit on Michigan. Thought you're a Michigan man.
You can't ever quit. But I'm just saying, like, if you have to lose Harbaugh to lose Irving Myers, that's
I'm going to do that deal. We never beat Urban Meyer, and that was the biggest bummer for me. I just wanted to get him at least once, but
at least, I mean, the one thing you can sleep well at night is Urban Meyer seems like a real great dude. So you know, it's nice.
He's a good guy.
Solid.
Salt to the earth kind of guy.
Salt to the earth.
All right. Excellent job. This is the last show of the year.
Yeah, we'll get to Patreon content.
We didn't say yippee-ki-yay the whole fucking time.
Yeah, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Excellent job. You guys did a great job. Great movie. Really, like, I was making fun of it this whole time, and there's a lot of things to make fun of it, but you can see...
Fucking great. It's
Alan Rickman
movie.
Is so good, and it's so obvious why Bruce Willis became such a fucking megastar. Like,
and
he's awesome.
This is all the proof you need that the Oscars are trash.
Yeah,
because Rickman didn't even get nominated.
Yeah, well, it's an action movie.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
just like Goodman and Lebowski. Like, when they don't get nominated for actual good performances, who gives them?
Well, there's a lot of like English Patience and Chocolat and stuff like
trash.
That. Okay, so for Mark the Nomad, for Easy Ed Daily, Greasy Ed Daily, my name's Brian Beckner. This has been episode 248 of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. We will see you next year.
Broadcasting weekly, that's what we do with Easy Ed Daily and a man Jay Stu and Brian Beckner, quick to dissect the week in sports and culture and whatever. Plus, you know there's Kate with a C, but she's known as Fancy Pop to you and me. Talking loud, comments, conundrums, my brothers. Reviewing some movies and shows and others. Top podcast, man, no one is above us. 5-star, even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit's so hot, man, you know the shit's on top. Top podcast, man, it really hits the spot. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is so flawless. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is for all of us.